Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals?
Maybe it's spending too much time obsessing about true crime.
No, John, that can only be a healthy thing.
Well, then maybe it's Matt.
Yeah, his voice is probably giving people nightmares.
Well, Dedicators, you can use BetterHelp Online Counseling.
Good point, John. Take a drink.
You can schedule video and phone sessions plus chat and text with your therapist.
And the licensed therapist specialized in depression, stress, relationships, LGBT matters, grief, and much more.
Best of all, it's a truly affordable option. Martinis and Murder listeners get 10% off your first month with a discount code MARTINIS.
So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/martinis.
Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/martinis. Hold on. I love Yoohoo.
Of course you do.
Gonna
you're
open
a child.
The show like that. Welcome to the show.
Hi, everyone.
We have our drinks in front of us before we've even hit
literally, record. We were just kibitzing about, let's be frank, chopping penises off.
That's true.
Do I need an explanation?
Maybe.
No. Yesterday, so we're recording this on a Wednesday, as we always do. Yesterday was Andy's son's bris.
Right.
And I was there. Very intimate affair.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to leave to go do this. Well, I didn't leave. I went upstairs in his apartment to go take this interview that John and I were in. And it was like going from chopping one thing to chopping bodies. And I just couldn't handle it.
Well, you G-chatted me this in the middle of our interview.
And I made you laugh, which was unfortunate.
Yeah.
But we were just talking about, kibitzing, and then Gina just plunks the drinks down where I haven't even recorded, and boom, Matt's done, and he's out, and we fired him.
And it's time to move on, I think, from Matt, right?
How did it happen where, Matt used to make the drinks, and
right?
He was here early, getting
ice?
Now when I come late, I see Matt just sitting there, and, Gina's, bustling and doing work,
yeah.
And, how did that happen? Transition happen? Did we all agree that Gina makes better drinks than Matt? Or was Matt a lot on my plate?
That's a very good question.
Right.
I think the other question is, when was the last time Matt even
made a drink
on the show?
I don't know, when he opened a fucking Yingling for us 2 years ago and there was an uproar.
Well, why don't we just jump straight to the drink before we get into some of our top of show news?
Gina will explain it because she made it.
It looks like
a strawberry milkshake.
Everybody's
and I said I said to John when we started, it looks like
it looks
strawberry
so
Yoohoo, and
yeah.
Then you got excited that it could potentially be strawberry Yoohoo,
and you
were hoping for it.
And I keep yelling into the mic because I'm getting excited.
I'm very excited.
Gene, I'll give you your mic here in just a second, but do you know how much I love Yoohoo and
of course
how
he does.
Hard it is to find Yoohoo in convenience stores these days?
Is it?
Oh
in New
God.
York City?
Whenever I go back to Maryland, for some reason I just get on a Yoohoo kick. I don't know. Maybe it's the mountains.
Oh my God, you are wild and crazy.
And I had a whole Instagram story for a while where I was like,
"Stop!
Where is Yoohoo? I can't find it anywhere." Of course, you could go to Walmart and buy it by the dozens, but a regular cold Yoohoo is hard to find.
I'm picturing a drunk John Thrasher dressed as Amy Winehouse,
yes,
from store to
in
store
Nashville
in Maryland,
by himself at Walmart at midnight looking for Yoohoo. Is that where you were at Walmart when we were at CrimeCon? We're maybe. Looking for Yoo-hoo?
Maybe.
Now we know what to get you.
Yes. Oh my God. Please get me Yoo-hoo.
Yoo-hoo.
Love some Yoo-hoo. Do you want to sponsor us? Yeah. Let's talk about it.
Gina, get to the actual drink. Yeah, if sorry, it has nothing Gina. To do with strawberries and Yoo-hoo, we're going to be sorely disappointed. Yeah.
Hi, Gina.
Hi, Steph. Boozer.
What's up? What are we drinking today? What's this beautiful concoction?
Well, it is Valentine's week.
That's right. Yeah,
I love Valentine. You guys. Aww. I made you a a chocolate cherry drink. With it's got Stillhouse whiskey in it, which is infused with a spiced cherry liqueur.
Ooh.
And then we
got... Oh my God, I am all about this drink. I'm already sipping. Sorry, Gina.
No, that's okay.
And creme de cacao, some chocolate syrup, some grenadine. There's a cherry in there, so be careful.
And Gina, don't forget to tell them, you know, Gina, for everyone who doesn't know, sits next to me here in the office. She was like, John, this has everything. Chocolate, grenadine, cherries. And she was like, half and half. And I was like, yes, I will take a half and half
shot. You're
going
to love this. If you like cherries, you definitely get that cherry flavor in there.
Yes, I do.
But it's not overpowering in any way. It tastes like a milkshake without any thickness.
Please, let's stop talking because I have to drink this.
I tasted it. That's
cheers,
actually,
bitch, for
that
everybody.
I had to sip it. I'm sorry.
Valentine's Day.
You guys all are my
love
Valentine's.
Love you guys.
What will baby Tersh's bris look like?
Oh my God.
Do we get
really
a bris
going
for
there?
Baby Tersh?
I guess it's up to you and Matt.
Matt, what are your thoughts? Do we believe it's mutilation or do we... John's in heaven. He's dead.
It's the best
He
drink
died.
I've
Megan
ever had.
Died.
It's the best drink, and I know...
Let's get back to circumcision.
Yeah, let's go right to that. Before we get to circumcision, one of the things that a listener made whenever they did the martinis and murder bingo was, you know, take a drink or put a thing down every time John says it's his favorite drink. This might be the actual one of my favorite drinks. Gina, it's delicious.
Gina, this is
thank
really...
You.
It makes me very, very Valentine's Day, and I have no emotions or feelings.
And thanks for caring and, like, putting a lot of effort into it, Gina. And not that Matt
No, she
doesn't.
Was hustling.
Not
like, that, Matt was sitting here with his...
Not that Matt hasn't in the past. I do.
Hey,
I don't want to get it.
I also thought about Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
What did you get us?
Well, where's my... Do I have chocolate?
I didn't get you anything.
Oh. So
physical, but it's in the script. I've thought a lot about this episode.
Well, good thing I didn't read the script, so the surprise isn't ruined for me.
I'm just going to say,
oh God,
you all have very beautiful eyes. I love your eyes. And
oh, no.
I like to stare into your eyes sometimes as we're recording.
I know something's I have with the eyes.
On Valentine's Day.
Something happens.
I love you is what you're trying to say, Matt. Is that what it is?
Yeah. And I love your eyes.
Where are Miles and Maggie?
Let's get them back. Milkshakes and magic in here.
Eyes are... The windows onto the soul.
Oh.
Right?
Could you help Gina, please? She's like struggling with the door behind you and you're sitting there romancing. Jesus. Be aware, Matt.
Yeah. Thanks, Gina. She just went
back
to her
desk.
Thank
you, Gina. Someone said on our Facebook group, like, why is every Matthew named Matt and not Hugh?
Mm.
So someone was like, we're going to call Matt Hugh from now on, which I feel like is better.
Yeah, that's fair.
So Hugh, pay attention.
I never thought about Hugh like that. Like, is that what
or
that's
Hugh.
From? Or
Hugh.
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 I like
Hugh.
That.
Yeah.
Did
I
you
know
that Topher Grace is really Christopher, but it's the second half of Christopher?
No, I know. Like, remember when you thought my last name was Carpenter?
Yeah.
And you thought that someone like nicknamed my last name and then we, yeah.
Yeah, that was
PTSD.
A thing.
We don't have to bring it up.
We were a good, like, several months into our friendship when that happened, too.
Oh, years.
It's fine.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, let's get to some quick news, because last week, Darren, we discussed and announced that we were going to be at South by Southwest.
Yes, we were in Austin, and I know that a couple of people were upset that I said we're going down under, because we have some Australian listeners.
Oh, we do.
And I didn't mean that.
Everyone's like, wait, what the hell's
going
on? I know,
and I was like, I'm sorry.
To be clear, you meant the down under of the U.S.
Of the United States.
Right. We're going to be doing a live show there as part of the South by Southwest Festival. It'll be on Saturday, March 9th at the Container Bar.
Which is such a cool bar, and
yes.
I've been there before.
Yes, you have been there.
I have been. Specific time and ticket details are still to be determined, as most things in our life always are. But
right.
We wanted to announce this now for anyone who may need to make travel plans. Please come. We would love to see you. Love to hang out. Container Bar is actually so fucking cool. It was there.
Yeah.
I think it is a gay bar.
Oh, really?
Or I was just there on a gay night. Hard to say.
You just are surrounded
because
by gays.
I went to Austin with 14 gay men and me. So
how was that, by the way?
you know, like at first I was a little wary, not because like I hate gay men, but just because like I always hang out with gay men. I'm like, I feel like I'm always at going to gay bars and I'm like, all right, there's not really much here for me. But you know what? Like when people were starting to get sassy in those bars to me or to anyone else, like a harem of my gay men just came up and they fucking protected me and it was amazing. So I've got nothing bad to say and great style.
Gays are fiercely loyal, gay men.
Fiercely loyal. And keep an eye on our social media and of course the show notes here for any relevant weeks in the year in the weers and weeks to come. It's at martinis_murder, at Jay Thrasher, at Carpe Darren.
And if you must.
At Munderman_the_bartender. You could just bleep that out, Megan. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, that would be fine.
I'm fine with it.
Are we still considering doing like a meet and greet sort of a situation for people who don't have badges?
I think if we get enough people, especially on our Facebook group, to say that they want to come, I think we should.
Well, the other thing, too, we have to think about, guys, you know, our time management. Because if we're going to be doing a live show till a certain hour...
It's going to take 3 hours to get some Yoohoo for you.
Right.
Right? And then you're in bed by 8. So
I've got to shop for vegetables by
7. We have 45
seven,
minutes, and know? That's it. That's what we can do.
Well, you guys might have expected that to be our last little update, but Darren...
But it's not.
If it's not possible for you guys to make it to Austin, we have another big announcement coming this week.
Yes.
But Darren, why don't you give us some details, like what we can say right now of Sunday when this episode drops.
I know, it's like we're such bad teases. We're announcing a second live show somewhere in the United States this week.
But we can tell them where exactly. Remember?
Yes.
Yep.
It's in March.
Mm-hmm.
In New York City. I was getting ready for like the big announcement play.
Sorry,
you know,
you
know, you were, I was.
I know, I stifled on it.
I was trying to think of like something that wasn't Down Under. Like, it's very close to where we are.
We should have really teased it or like done like a puzzle or
something.
Yeah,
maybe like a little game.
Yeah.
It's the city we're currently living in.
That's
called
true.
New York.
Yep.
It's going to be in March. We are definitely going to have details for you guys very, very shortly because it is happening in March for sure.
Yeah.
Towards the end of March. So don't worry about it being in the beginning. Stay tuned on our social media and Facebook groups as well for that. And we're so fucking excited. We want everyone to come.
Yes. So mark your calendars. Late March is all we can say for now. But we should mention it's not at Caroline's. So I want to make sure
it's
we say
it's not at Caroline's. And I believe it's free.
Yes. And Caroline's is where, for those who don't know, we've done two previous live shows.
It's in a completely different area.
Yeah.
We just don't want to announce details and then have to backtrack anything before we know fully. But we know that it's free and it's in New York City and we want everyone to come.
And this will probably be the only free show that we ever do.
I was just going to say that.
Probably.
Yeah.
It probably will.
Book your hotels just for the last 2 weeks.
Stay with John. Stay on the line and I'll give you John's address. He's willing to house anybody. Right, John?
Careful.
Housing anybody.
No, I don't think
who
so.
Who murdered someone in the past.
That I would do.
Yes, that's fair.
But we should say by this coming Thursday's Another Shot, but when you're listening to this episode, you'll know. So there you go.
I can tell Matt put something like this one-liner in here to like make it funny. And he was like, and I'm just going to read it verbatim.
I didn't actually.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay, Matt.
I didn't. No, just wait.
I know what's happening here.
Someone helped with the script and wrote this.
Okay.
And when I first read it, I was like, what the fuck is this? What? And then obviously you get it later.
Yeah.
But anyway,
so hold on to this line.
Okay, yeah, I'm gonna say the line, and then John's just gonna
go right into it.
If you cross your T's and dot your I's, maybe you can see who the killer of today's story is.
Oh,
ellipses.
All right. Maybe we should start every episode with a little riddle like that. You know?
Oh, maybe. But
that
then
would
Matt would have to write something, and then he'd be a part of the podcast again. And we're slowly
and
trying to edge
that?
Him out.
Well,
it's snowing behind you. Just wanted to say before you get into the murder.
Oh my God,
it's
a little flurry.
Is it?
I don't mind little flurries, by the way. I hate winter. Okay, let's get into the actual story.
Yeah, let's go.
On December 13th, 1990 in Dallas, Texas, two detectives, Westphalen and his partner McNear, were called early in the morning to a homicide scene in Cotton Valley near the Dallas County line. I have some friends that lived in and around Dallas, and I was like, guys, did you ever hear of Cotton Valley? And they're like, no. I don't know what that is. And I was
great.
Oh, okay. Anyway, McNear told Mark of a Killer, which is a show on Oxygen.
Yes, it is.
Quote, when we arrived, there was a nude body of a female lying in the street, a young lady probably in her 30s. It appeared that she had been shot in the head.
Spoiler alert, not me, because I'm still alive.
Oh, good.
Yeah, good. We were all wondering.
Glad to confirm.
Yeah,
that.
Megan looked at me like.
She was unsure.
She was unsure.
She gasped like
that. Yeah, clutched her pearls.
His partner told Mark of a Killer, quote, a woman that was shot and killed and left for dead. At that time in Dallas, Dallas, that was not an anomaly, but the way the body was positioned was certainly abnormal.
Hmm.
The woman was placed or posed in a horrible and vulgar way with her breasts and vagina exposed.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. Stop. No. The presses fade to black. And it doesn't fucking matter what the rest of the story is.
Her hands up. By the way,
he had to finish the sentence. Of course, he had to finish
the sentence. That's our Valentine's Day episode. Actually, that's it.
It's our Valentine's Day episode.
Oh my God.
And happy fucking Christmas to everyone, because that was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Listen, like I said the last time, if it is part of my professional obligation to say, I'm not going to be crude.
Okay, but you delineated the speaking parts today, and I noticed that you gave yourself the vagina line.
Like I said, I never really look. I clearly should
have looked. You're basically in the vagina monologues now.
guys, can we get back on track? Can you redo that line?
She needs you to redo that line, John.
Oh, I see what Megan's doing. No, Megan, nice try.
She was like, let's get back on track. Right into the mic, sweetie.
Okay, guys, let's move on from this. Okay,
so she had her breasts and her vagina exposed, hands up.
In a terrible way, yeah. So the detectives believe that she had been killed elsewhere and intentionally placed there. An officer at the scene recognized the woman as Mary Pratt, a 33-year-old sex worker from the area. The body was taken in for a routine autopsy. It was clear that there was a gunshot wound to the head at close range. Detective McNear said, quote, it was an intimate crime. Possibly she knew the killer.
Which happens quite a bit, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of those, unless, you know, maybe it's like a serial killer rampage, which we've discussed, like a lot of those things happen, especially if something's so vulgar like that. I could see it being like a revenge
type
of thing.
Yeah.
Lust.
According to Texas Monthly, the medical examiner, quote, noted the needle tracks on Pratt's arm, the Playboy bunny tattoo on her chest, the bullet hole in her head, end quote. So despite the obvious gunshot wound, the medical examiner continued her autopsy. She told Mark of the killer, quote, you document everything you find, hair length and color, teeth condition, piercings, tattoos, scars, eye color, end quote. But when it came to check her eye color, the medical examiner was shocked to find an eye was gone.
Keep in mind what Matt was trying to woo us with earlier.
Right. She said, quote, there's no globe or eyeball present, but I knew she had a gunshot wound to the head, and occasionally a bullet path will disrupt an eyeball. It's not real common, but it's certainly not unheard of, end quote.
And just to like...
gruesome.
And let me just reiterate, my biggest fear is to go blind. Spiders and blindness. So this one's like really killing me.
She opened the other eye, and it was also missing.
I'm done.
Texas Monthly reported, quote, Mary Pratt's eyes had been cut out and removed so carefully that her upper and lower eyelids were left undisturbed. This was not an operation taught in medical school. The killer had to know how to slip a knife around the eyes, making sure not to injure the adjoining skin, and then cut the six major muscles holding each eye in the socket, as well as the rope-tough optical nerve, end quote.
And let me just say, I mean, I'm not a doctor in any sort of way, but I imagine like the eyes and like how they're attached is a very sensitive thing.
Right.
This is clearly not a quick murder.
No,
right?
No,
this isn't like take it, chop the eyes out. Like this is done delicately and with time.
Ooh, that's such a good point.
Yeah.
Take a drink after that.
You know what? I fucking will, because this Yoo-hoo shit is great.
The Daily News reported, quote, it was the first time she'd ever seen anything like it, but it would not be the last. This form of mutilation would become the signature of a monster, end quote. Detective McNair told Mark of a Killer, quote, we're not talking about a violent pulling of eyes out of a socket. We're talking about taking time and being very methodical and performing surgery after death to remove the eyes, end
I'm
quote.
Hoping it was after death.
Well, I was thinking like, you know, we're getting a lot of quotes here about methodical surgeries. I'm like, is it a doctor?
Well, you'd think, right?
We'll find out.
Also, so, just to mention, Mark of the Killer is a new show on Oxygen.
Yes, I mentioned that.
Sorry.
That's okay.
No, and you have to listen, Matt.
No,
if you're going to
okay.
be in the room. Like,
no, it's good
should,
to know.
We should just reiterate. Like,
yeah, it's reiterating.
It's not, this show is not about seeing. This show is not about hearing, right? It's about seeing. So technically, Matt, just, you know, he might have been deaf for like 10 minutes.
It sounds like
he
it.
Saw you say it. He just didn't interpret it.
There you go.
So the cops canvassed the neighborhood looking for any
brutal
clues.
Brutal today, Darren. Brutal.
Well, I gave him a little gift.
He's like, oh, I can't take it.
God, this is, I know why this is happening. We'll discuss it later.
Even on work emails, it's been bad.
I know why this is happening.
Mm.
It's been bad on work emails, too, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have you noticed in group things, I'm like, ugh, Matt, stop responding.
I just politely
told him. To, like, the head
him.
Of the department.
Yeah.
I've, like, it's really gotten to be.
We'll have to discuss it on another show.
We'll do it
There's
on another show.
There's a lot of, like, parental thing.
So badly.
Maybe we disagree about the way our child should be raised. There's a lot of things. Ooh, okay. Yeah, lots of
Let's
things.
Let's keep
there.
It going. Yep.
So the cops canvassed the neighborhood looking for any clues, and the first tip came from a policewoman named Regina Smith. Fun fact, my first girlfriend ever was named Regina.
Is this her?
Not
Regina Smith.
Oh, okay. But she was an RS. Ooh, her last name was not Smith, but started with
an S. That's interesting.
Regina told Mark of the Killer, quote, "I was a police officer, a young rookie police officer. All the prostitutes, we knew them very well, and we dealt with them on a daily, hourly basis."
That's a quote.
That's a quote. Just know we normally try and say sex worker on this show.
Right.
She continued, quote, "I ran into Veronica Rodriguez. Veronica Rodriguez was a regular prostitute in the Oak Cliff area. She was working early that morning," end quote. Turns out Veronica was cut up and had dirt and mud in her hair. Mm. Regina Smith just, you know, asked what happened. Veronica said that she and Mary Pratt, who was the deceased person, were doing a double with a guy in a field when she had been attacked and ran for her life. She said she escaped into the darkness to a neighbor's house. However, Veronica was also incredibly strung out on drugs, and Regina knew her to fabricate stories, which, listen, maybe fabricate stories also on drugs is not going to help your case. And like a lot of times when you're so fucked up on any one drug, like it's not admissible in court.
Right.
She wasn't able to describe the man, his name, or who had helped her. And to make matters worse, there was a crime wave in Dallas at the time with hundreds of murders a year. The homicide department was overloaded, and soon the case went cold, which is so sad. Yeah. 2 months later, another body was found. Officer Regina Smith said, quote, "She was displayed but in a very similar pattern as Mary, partially nude, breast showing, arms flailed out, legs flailed out in a very vulgar manner," end quote. Vulgar, but it also makes me think of like an exposed vulnerability, if that makes sense. Like,
and a disrespect, right? For the
playing on the, like, the, I don't know, the softness of a woman.
Oh, interesting. You know?
Maybe a hatred.
Yeah. Well, I think that's right, right? Yeah. That's what it seems like. The woman had been shot multiple times and was taken in for an autopsy. Mary Pratt's medical examiner told Mark of the Killer, quote, "Monday morning there was another doctor and he said, oh, remember that case you had with the eyes gone? I had another one like that this weekend," end quote. Authorities soon realized both bodies were even found just 8 blocks apart.
Oh, wow.
So that seems like two does maybe not make a pattern, but both the eyes cut out, both vulgar positions, 8 blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
This woman's fingerprints identified her as a 27-year-old sex worker named Susan Peterson. Officer Regina Smith and her partner had a strong relationship with Susan. She told Mark of the Killer, quote, "I saw Susan Peterson before she was killed, and she told me that I would be proud of her because she was clean now and that she was getting married. I said, well, I'm happy for you. She said, well, I'll just hope you find who killed Mary. The next day, Susan Peterson was killed.
Wow.
I was actually frightened that Susan had been killed because I knew that if he got Susan, as tough as she was, that we were dealing with a very bad killer," end quote. That just seems like eerie timing to me. I don't know if that's a coincidence or something's involved here.
Well, another thing that this reminds me of is, I don't remember exactly which episode or which killer we had talked about, but this pervasive sense that like a killer knows when people are talking about him, and like
this is East Area Rapist when they were at that town meeting.
Yes, that's what
it
was.
And he was there, and then like that couple that spoke out got killed like the next day. So it's
like haunting out, and like the like what happens is so disturbing as well, but then like when you think about the mental part of it, it's very disturbing.
Especially with social media now too, it just feels we almost can't escape it.
Yeah, totally.
The Dallas police then reached out to the FBI to check a database of murder victims in the U.S. There weren't any victims that had their eyes surgically removed. The FBI's behavioral unit also went to work on the case. They determined that a gun had been used to kill the victim quickly because the primary goal was to get the eyes. This is literally killing me.
It is.
The victims being left vulgarly exposed implied it was a sex crime, and somehow the eyes were linked to pleasure.
Mm.
The fuck?
Yeah.
Matt? Authorities thought perhaps they had a crazy doctor or surgeon on their hands because the eyes had been removed with such precision.
That's
as we had
I
said
thought.
Before.
Yeah.
A behavioral analyst told Mark of the Killer, quote, "My experience with serial sexual killers is that they will craft a lifestyle around themselves, and that can include the kind of work that they do, when they go to work, who they pick as a wife or partner. That won't question them when they go out late at night, all in an effort to continue this behavior that is so important to them." And that's true, right? I mean, like, so many killers had, Green River killers, so many people had just like, they were neighborhoods. They were stalwarts of their community. You know, they parked people's cars. They shoveled their driveway. You know, they had jobs that would just let them go out at night. And here they are, this other side to them.
Well, this also like made me think like, what is somebody, it made me sad for like the human condition, I guess you could say, because you know, we've talked about this. I do not empathize with any serial killer. Don't get me wrong. What I empathize with is that they're in a place mentally where things like this would happen, where they would do something like this, where they would do such a heinous thing. And it's like, what in your human brain makes you want to do something like this to other humans?
But that's,
you know,
what I think we struggle with too. And I do as well. And I know that we've sort of talked about like my empathy for sometimes.
Yeah.
For Ed Gein.
Right. It wasn't Ed
Gein. Your best friend.
Yeah. You know, I think there's a lot of other factors of history and how you grew up. And mm-hmm. I think that you can see that, you know, like I'm watching this Netflix show right now called I'm a Killer.
Yeah.
And it's all people on death row. And I've mentioned this to you before, and every case is different. But, you know, and a lot of, and most of them admit that they killed someone, you know, mm-hmm. when they were 17 or when they were 20. And then they kind of go back into the history and you find out that they were sexually abused, or you find out that they experienced like these horrible things. And well,
and
yes,
it manifests itself.
And it manifests itself in certain, you know, and that's what they're used to. And it's a little bit of a nature nurture thing.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, all serial killers are good people, but I'm saying that there's a lot more to it than just being like a normal human being who's like, no, I fucking hate you, so I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
Like, there's a difference mentally between a quote unquote normal human being who's functioning properly like us and someone who's willing to murder in cold blood.
Yeah.
And
John,
we should take that into credit.
I agree. I mean, he just loves eyes. I mean, why are you so judgmental? He
Matt loves our eyes.
Where is this going?
He loves eyes.
If I open Matt's drawer in his office and there's like a collection of eyeballs, I'm out of here.
Well, he doesn't have papers and filings and things like that. So it's filled with something, because when you open one of his cabinets, it's just alcohol.
That's true. It's literally,
I wouldn't be surprised.
Endless shelves of alcohol at the moment.
His office is just a green screen.
Yeah, right, exactly. But yeah, to wrap this up, I think there's a bigger debate here of like, are killers born that way?
Yeah.
Is it like, you know?
I think it's a really good nature nurture argument,
yeah,
and I don't think it's 100% on either way.
Yeah. Let us know what you guys think too in the like Facebook group or something.
Yeah, please do, because that's such a good discussion going on there.
A month after Susan Peterson was killed, the case had gone cold again.
Why though? This also bothers me. Like, why the fuck is this going cold? We have two murders, you know, no eyes, done similarly, 8 blocks away. Hello.
Well, it was thought that the crimes were arrogant and bold and had a high risk of evidence being found or the murderer being caught in the act. But despite this, the authorities had no leads. That is until Officer Smith ran into Veronica Rodriguez again.
Huh, okay.
She was doing a trick and ran to the cops and asked them not to arrest her client, saying he was the neighbor who had saved her. Remember, Veronica was thought of as being unreliable.
Yeah, because she was kind of on drugs when she was talking to her, so that could have, you know, swayed her.
Well, the Daily News wrote, quote, drugs had fried her brain and she lied and was incoherent much of the time, end quote. The John's name, you know, I don't know if I put that word in there, the John's name.
I like this name.
Yeah. Was Axton Schindler, and his nickname was Speedy because he talks so fast.
Should like
be
Darren.
Me. Yeah, he should totally be.
Maybe Speedy should be Darren's serial killer name.
I like that.
Okay.
We had some, didn't we? Oh, the local lesbian. That was yours. Matt came up with that. His one credit.
It's not sticking.
Well, when Officer Smith asked him about the night Mary Pratt had been murdered, he was dismissive towards her and said, quote, I don't know, according to Mark of the Killer. Was he just worried about being caught with a sex worker, or did he know something about the murder he wasn't telling police? Smith took all this info and his address, 1035 El Dorado, but she knew something was weird since that address was in North Oak Cliff. And if Veronica and Mary were attacked near there, how did Mary's body get to South Oak Cliff? It seemed far, but they contacted the homicide department and told them the story. But Regina Smith was a rookie cop and Veronica was considered to be unreliable. Homicide didn't hit them back about the tip. So there's like, you know, I talk about like, you know, police miscommunication and resources a lot. I think it's one of the things that I've learned of the most here on the show. And here's a great example of just like the communication across these departments just completely falling apart.
And I think that's how so easily many cases can go cold. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, oh, we have no leads, but like something something else could be a lead and they just don't know it.
Well, Axton Schindler became a person of interest, but police had nothing on him and let him go. 1 month later, in March of 1991, another body was found and police immediately recognized the pattern. It was definitely a serial killer. The woman was quickly identified as Shirley Kimberly Williams is at, and as you might have guessed, she was found with no eyes in her sockets.
Okay, so this is a fucking serial killer now.
Yeah, exactly. According to the Daily News, quote, Shirley Williams, 45, was found on a road in full view of an elementary school.
Oh, God.
Which is horrible. Remind me to tell you about something from when I was in elementary school, when I finished this part. Oh. But something was different this time. The eyes had been removed more brutally. The medical examiner told Marka the Killer, quote, what was obvious on first looking at Shirley Williams as versus the other two, she had put up a fight, end quote. She had fought and lost, covered in bruises with a gunshot through the cheek. But when a fight happens, DNA is spread everywhere. Skin under the nails from scratching, hair is shed, fibers are exchanged. The medical examiner found a cut in the temple with fragments of metal in it. It was a tiny piece of an X-Acto knife blade. So like a box cutter, I guess.
Yeah, a box cutter. Yeah. But in the temple, that seems
crazy. That's terrible.
Wait, tell me your middle school elementary school. Sorry.
Yeah, whenever I was really young in fourth grade, there was a murder and the body was left at... It's kind of hard to explain. I lived in a house and there was a long, long driveway down to the road. And on the, across the street from like the driveway, essentially, was a little like... kind of like roundabout where like you could turn around if you were in a car, and the body was found down there.
Oh my God.
And that
John.
Morning I can't believe I've never mentioned this. I'm just remembering it now as I'm telling you, but that morning, I had walked down to catch the bus there.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing something and then like being like, what is that? This is only in fourth grade. And then the bus came and I left. And then when I came back after school was out, there were like police everywhere and all up into like where I was living in the driveway and stuff. And it was, I later realized that's where the body was. I don't really like remember the body per se.
Right.
I just remember thinking like, what is like, there was like a, I guess like a lump of stuff over there. I didn't know what it was at the time. Yeah. Isn't that kind of creepy?
I mean, I sort of get why you, not necessarily like you blanked it out, but like, I get that, but like sort of why you blanked it out or it wouldn't be like, there are so many memories that like someone has to say something. I'm like, oh yeah.
Well, when
this
you're in
happened.
Fourth grade, you don't really think that it's a dead body. You're just kind of like recognize that something is like, out of the ordinary.
I remember my brother's, I want to say he was in elementary school. He must have been like in second grade. Mm-hmm. And his principal was killed because from a tree, like during a storm in my hometown, like fell on her car.
I had heard of that had happened in my hometown
and like
too.
Died. I was so young, right? Well, yeah, my brother's 3 years older than me. So
your principal?
His principal, like in school, because I like, I either wasn't in school yet or we were in a different school or something. But I remember that happening.
That's
and being
shocking
like, oh
for
my
kids,
God.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I just remember, like, it's hard to wrap your head around death at any age, right. But I think especially then. But I blanked it out until someone says something like that. And I'm
totally.
So the X-Acto blade, which again, the cut was found in her temple, the X-Acto blade was big. It eliminated doctors and surgeons that would likely have professional tools. This was most likely an amateur or hobbyist of some sort that had some medical training or at least an understanding of anatomy, right?
And I immediately thought, too, especially because it was so different of an attack, that maybe this is a copycat killer.
Totally.
You know?
It could be. And like,
which happens often.
You know, having a precise, like, I don't know if I would know how to, like, precisely remove eyes. That
or do
seems,
you?
Well, you'll never know.
Tune in to the show.
Yeah, if Matt's blind next episode, we know why.
We know why.
The killer could be anyone that had figured out how to properly remove an eyeball. So that widened the search a little bit. And there was real evidence here. 2 head hairs in her left hand and 1 intact pubic hair on the back of her neck, which is weird.
Yeah, that is weird.
Like, I don't want to be inappropriate and say that, like,
project.
How do you know? Project. Pubic hair is everywhere. How would you know that it's, like, a pubic hair versus something else? I mean, like, I understand it's shorter and curlier and whatever.
There
it might
be
different. But, like, if it's a man, you wouldn't necessarily know, right? Or, like...
Maybe there are certain DNA
I'm just curious.
Differences. Yeah, I don't know.
Let us know in the Facebook group if you fucking know how you can tell outside of the obvious things that I'm asking here.
Right.
In 2019, they could just call 23andMe and solve it right here,
well,
right?
That's true,
I mean,
yeah.
Like, that would be so easy, but this was not then. It was hard evidence, but there was still no suspect. A few days later, a sex worker came forward and wanted to tell police about someone that had attacked her. The John had started driving her somewhere different than he had said she told him to. Quote, let me out of the car, end quote. The man became enraged and said, quote, I hate hoes. I'm going to kill all of you hoes, end quote. Which we've seen before. People attacking sex workers or a certain faction think that no one cares about them and that they're doing justice to society. You know, we've seen this. The sex worker then maced him and jumped out of the car. Good for her.
Yeah.
Officer Smith asked him what he looked like. And according to Mark of a Killer, she said, quote, he's a white male with salt and pepper hair, muscular build, and Mexican looking, end quote. Smith clarified to Mark of a Killer, quote, he's not Mexican, but he has olive skin tone. That's what she meant, end quote. Okay. I have olive skin tone as well. It's just like, I don't know, like a little bit darker. It's not pale.
Yeah, like you're a not shade pale. Or so. Yeah.
That didn't sound like Axton Schindler, the only one who had been a person of interest so far. They started looking up any tips that they had seen if anyone matched that description. And then Smith put in 1035 El Dorado.
Axton's address.
Axton's address. It pulled up a man named Frederick Albright, Axton's landlord. Mm. And Frederick also owned property close to where two of the bodies were dumped. Okay, this is looking good. Also, there was an oddity. Frederick had a death certificate and a voting record that extended beyond the death.
Uh-oh.
This doesn't look good. Another officer overheard Smith talking about the tip and realized it matched a different tip he had gotten from a woman that said she had dated a man with a fascination for eyes.
Oh, my God. Matt.
His name was Charles.
Matt, the bartender. Oh.
Yeah. Oh. Charles underscore the underscore Albright. Right. Charles Albright, who was actually Frederick's son. Regina told Mark of the Killer, quote, I had a funny feeling inside very quickly. He had multiple charges. He'd been to prison. I had his picture, end quote.
Listen, if someone has multiple charges, been to prison, and says they have a fascination for eyes,
you're a suspect.
That's kind of suspect.
And then the case went cold.
And then the case went cold.
And then we just gave up.
Right.
And the photo was of a man who was 57 years old and had salt and pepper hair, an athletic build, and olive skin. Ooh. He also had it, which doesn't say anything outside of the fact that he's matching the description.
Sure.
He also had an overnight job as a newspaper delivery man, which could be a built-in alibi, as we were saying. He had to leave the house to go do these things.
Also, probably knows maps and roads pretty well, if you ask me.
Totally.
If you're
totally.
A newspaper person.
That was sort of what we said about East Area Rapists, you know, when you escape on bicycles. Like, he must have knowledge of the area.
Well, specifically.
Let's see how many people called to complain that they didn't get their newspapers delivered the morning after a murder took place.
Ooh, Detective Matt over here.
Well, next, a sex worker that maced the man was presented with a photo lineup that included Charles Albright, and she ID'd him immediately.
Interesting.
The feeling of ID'ing someone immediately has to be like a rush.
Oh, sure,
right?
Yeah.
Then Veronica Rodriguez was also shown a lineup, and she also ID'd Charles Albright as the man from whom she escaped. With two positive IDs, it was time for the authorities to move on him. A tactical squad assembled, and around 2 a.m., they threw flashbangs through two windows into Charles' home. He did not resist, nor did his live-in girlfriend, who was visibly shaken.
Oh, can you imagine, like...
Oh, my God.
Oh,
Officer Smith told Mark of a Killer, quote, I gave her a cigarette, calmed her down because she had just been through utter hell. And the next thing I saw was Charles Albright in red bikini underwear, Matt. And then they brought him over to me and they said, Officer Smith, is this the guy? And I said, yes, that's it.
Let's talk about red bikini underwear. Was it like...
What are your thoughts? Is it like bunching for you?
No.
You don't like red?
I'm saying, like, is it women's bikini underwear or men's bikini? Because there are both. I don't know if we want the visual. Maybe we should move on.
You tell me, because I don't shop in the male bikini department.
Oh, yeah. They have like, well, a male bikini is just like, it's a brief, but like a like way shorter around the waist. Like, yeah, kind of like a Speedo. So I don't know.
What do you hope it
Who
is?
Who cares what it is?
What do you hope it is?
None of the above. Let's move on. Yes.
I'm wondering what the state of the eyes were of his living room.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, because I want to know, like, I was thinking, like, not only is she traumatized, but like, she also has to realize that she's dating
in the middle of something,
like in the middle of something major.
Yeah.
Well, Charles Albright denied everything and claimed he didn't know any sex workers, nor did he ever sleep with one. Mm-hmm. Immediately, the cops tore apart his home looking for eyeballs, X-Acto knives, hair fibers, and even took the bag from the vacuum cleaner looking for any DNA. Fucking smart.
In case you might have dropped one and vacuumed it up.
Right. Or you're just like an overly neat freak. Right.
Right.
They did find newspaper clippings about the murders and books on serial killers. But okay, that's literally everyone who's listening to this right now.
Then arrest me, because have you seen my desk full of murderous books?
Yeah, right, exactly.
I have a taxidermy duck at my desk.
Yeah, anyone with a Netflix account and like a podcast app is a serial killer. Yep. And more alarmingly, an officer at the scene told Mark of a Killer, quote, he had hundreds of pictures of these women, which he focused on their eyes. These were women he saw at the mall. He would
take close up.
Good thing I don't go to a mall. He would take close-up shots of their faces as they walked by. He focused on the eyes. They found a fireplace with a trap door. which is cool.
Which, to be fair, I have one as well.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't. But if I did, I would definitely put a trapdoor.
Well, Megan has like speakeasies or shit in her house.
Right, totally.
Inside was several guns, and as a convicted felon, he was not allowed to have those. Automatic jail.
Yep.
Then they found lots of X-Acto knives all over the house. Although you have to admit, like, everyone kind of has an X-Acto knife. Like, that's something you get in a hardware store. Like, it's just needed. Like, as you said, it's a box cutter. It's like having scissors. Like, there's really no, that's not, you know.
That's not crazy.
No.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing was still missing. The actual eyes, which would have closed the case immediately. Like, what the fuck is he doing with
like
these?
Like, assuming that he's kept them, by the way, because who knows what he's actually doing with them.
But, like, if you don't keep them, what's the point?
I would imagine that he keeps them.
He's a
Because
collector.
What's the point?
Yeah. No, I agree.
Like,
I'm just saying.
Imagine taking them and, like, bait and catch. Like, and then you, like, throw them away.
You
like, there's
know.
Just, that's just crazy.
I agree.
Yeah.
Oh, Megan. Megan said eat them.
Megan's
like
off the show.
Megan, come on.
They did find a link to a storage unit connected to Charles Albright. However, Officer Smith told Mark of the Killer, it was like a scene out of a horrific movie. The place was filled with animals preserved in formaldehyde. There were stacks of jars filled with taxidermy stuff. But still, circumstantial evidence still there weren't any eyeballs.
Is taxidermy unhealthy? What's going on here?
Megan.
I'm just saying.
Megan, do you have a jar of eyeballs next
to
where?
I think we do, frankly, and I'm going to be keeping an eye on Megan.
I think we all feel differently about Megan after this show.
Matt laughed. I said I'm keeping an eye on Megan. Laugh.
Okay.
Please laugh.
Huh.
Thank you.
Was that good? Do you need something more sincere?
Thank you, I do. Very low self-esteem.
Yes, no, you need validation. Once a likely suspect was in jail, sex workers on the street started speaking more freely. A dozen sex workers were shown a lineup with Charles, and every single one identified him as one of their clients. I mean, I normally think that, you know, pointing someone out, like eyewitness testimony, like it's hard to kind of say, like, depends on how much of you see. Look, I don't think that should be the only piece of evidence that should work for your case. But if every single person is identifying the same man, and that says something, that gives it clout.
And identifying them separately, I think, is different.
No, but he said he had never slept with a sex worker.
Right, so automatically you know that he's lying. Officer Smith told Mark of a Killer, quote, some talk about how he would come by and give them hamburgers and clothes, that there was a Mr. Hyde to his Dr. Jekyll. Some would talk about how he wanted to do strange sadomasochistic acts with them, like beating them with a rope.
Ugh.
Okay. Apparently, he would pay them extra money to take a beating and scream a lot. He enjoyed the screaming. Which, listen, there are things called, I don't want to say rape fantasies, but it's like ravishment fantasies. That's what Dan Savage calls it.
Okay.
That's a real thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's nothing to be ashamed of. Like, that's a real thing that people are interested in. Like, some people like, you can want to be turned on by a struggle without having to make someone struggle.
Right.
So don't get that confused necessarily. There are different things there, and I think it's important to point out.
No, definitely. And I am very, like, sex positive about those types of things, but just make sure you know your limits, have your safe words, those types
of
things.
Well, and trust your partner.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Finally, one last piece of evidence sealed the deal. A sex worker came forward and said she saw Shirley Williams, the last woman to die, with Charles Albright the night she vanished.
Okay, that's pretty big.
That's big. She said she was last seen wearing a yellow raincoat and pointed detectives to a field where she often took Albright for quote-unquote dates. They searched that field and sure enough found a yellow raincoat.
Huh.
Smith said, quote, I had blood and everything. I just knew that was Shirley Williams' blood in there, end quote. But there was some hair on it, too. And forensic analysis took a while to figure out what it was. It was squirrel tail hair. And what's more amazing is when they emptied Albright's vacuum cleaner bag, they found the exact same squirrel hair along with 8 head hairs, that belonged to Shirley Williams.
Not for nothing, but imagine that search in a fucking vacuum bag.
Oh, I know. I know.
Like, they come up with just 8 hairs. Like,
also, vacuum bags are so, like, I hate vacuum bags.
Because you've cleaned up, like, the worst of
the
your
worst
apartment.
The worst of the worst, right. Well, Charles Albright was charged and convicted only in the death of Shirley, since investigators had by far the most evidence in that case. He was given a life sentence for her death. An officer in the case told Mark of a Killer, quote, you know, I've heard this phrase from folks afterwards. How do you know you got the right guy? It's simple. No more women died, end quote. That's interesting.
Yes, yeah. Right? Like, I think maybe for this case, like, there's evidence that even is greater than not having just women die. But, like, Yeah. However, there are killers that take periods off. You know, we talked about East Area. I mean, not to keep bringing that up, but just like it's very fresh in my mind just with everything going on. Like he took a 5-year break.
Yeah, lots of similarities.
And,
really.
You know, like you take a break, you kind of recalculate your method. You want to throw people off. So I don't know.
The thing about this that gets me, though, is that even though there were other women that died, he was able to be charged and convicted for a life sentence from one of them. But do the other victims' families want...
Right, do they get justice?
Yeah, they should get justice. Well, anyway, that's how they got him. But in an unprecedented interview with a surprisingly charming and suave Charles Albright, he told the Texas Monthly, quote, "You won't find any woman who'll say anything other than that I was always a perfect gentleman in their presence. I was always trying to do things for women. I would take their pictures. I would paint their portraits. I would give them little presents. I was always open for a lasting relationship." End
I quote. Really like that him doing stuff for women is I took their picture.
Right. Or I painted them.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, but like that's fucking creepy.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Let's keep that in mind.
Yeah. The Texas Monthly wrote, quote, "Albright had been described by many who knew him as the portrait of happiness, untroubled and troubling no one. He was, they said, a kind of Renaissance man, fluent in French and Spanish, a masterful painter, able to woo women by playing Chopin preludes on the piano or reciting poetry by Keats," end quote.
Okay, this sounds like, so I know, are you just a Bob Ross of that generation?
Oh, how's your Bob Ross Pez dispenser?
He's great.
Good.
Yeah, he's loving life.
He was born, not Bob Ross, but Charles Albright.
Let's just switch to Bob Ross. Bob Ross is born in 1933.
He was born in 1933 and adopted by the Albrights, who lived in a beautiful suburb of Oak Cliff. His mother later told him that his birth mother was a brilliant law student who got pregnant at 16 and was forced by her father to give up the child, something he later doubted was true, according to the Texas Monthly.
You know, that also has to do with, like, when we were talking about nature nurture, right?
Yeah,
he's adopted.
Totally.
Like, so we don't really know.
Well, and it's like, when did he find out?
Exactly.
How did that manifest?
Exactly.
His adopted mother, Dell, would sometimes dress him up in girls' dresses and make him hold dolls, according to Texas Monthly, which, by the way, in and of itself wouldn't be a bad thing, except the mother's forcing him to do it.
Yeah, so. I think forcing anyone to do anything against their will is wrong. Like, it wouldn't be weird. I mean, I dressed up in boys' clothes. So
are you kidding me?
But, like, voluntarily.
I loved, like, wrapping a blanket around my chest and pretending it was a dress. Like, that was my whole childhood.
That's adorable.
Yeah, thank you.
This isn't the first time we've heard of mothers doing this.
Right,
like,
exactly.
What's going on
Ed Gein, hello. That's why I had sympathy for him, because his mother was, like, fucking horrible.
Well, his mother would also change his clothes multiple times a day, and she would allegedly tie him to his bed when he wouldn't nap.
Sorry, not Gein, Kemper.
Oh, yeah.
Gein was the nipple belt. I'm thinking Kemper.
We're thinking Ed people. This is what's happening there. He was also spanked for not drinking his milk. The Texas Monthly wrote, quote, "As he grew older, she insisted on chauffeuring him every time he was on a date. She would even call the girl's parents to let them know that her son would not do anything untoward," end quote.
Oh.
Imagine that. Like, you're like at that age and your mom's like,
see, that's
cock blocking you.
And even though
ways.
I just corrected with Kemper, Gein also had mom issues.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
like,
they both did.
And like so many of them have parental issues of sorts, and just
they've
like
been abused in a sense.
Totally,
you know?
Even if it's emotional abuse, that's sometimes the worst kind because you can't physically see it.
We should say it doesn't justify their actions, but we're just saying if you're getting into the
just
mind
more to
of
the
a
story.
Killer,
right.
But he was a smart one, and she encouraged him so much that he was able to skip 2 grades in elementary school.
Wow.
The Daily News reported that Dell Albright was devoted and very strict. She nurtured the child's natural talents with piano, art, and language lessons.
Okay.
End quote.
Well, when Charles was 11 years old, his mother enrolled him in a taxidermy classes, Megan. As he learned, his mother stood beside him and his dead bird and showed him how to use the knife to cut the skull and scoop out the brains, according to Texas Monthly. I feel like you see where we're going with this.
Uh-huh.
Charles worked hard on his taxidermy classes and made his animals look as lifelike as possible. But there was one part of his mother that she wouldn't let him have. The eyes. He would stare for hours at the fake eyes in the taxidermy shop, but his mother thought they were too expensive, insisting they sew buttons instead. Oh my God, this is so fucking weird. Charles grew up as a mischievous child, stealing test answers, food, forging his grades, stealing watches, but it was mostly petty things and pranks, reported Texas Monthly. Eventually, he did get arrested and spent a year in jail for stealing merchandise from 3 stores, according to Texas Monthly. That's a good, you know, reminder to buy our merch on Oxygen.com.
Right. ShopOxygen.com.
After that, he cleaned up his act, found a girlfriend in college, and planned to marry her. But he planned one prank in college on his friend Andrew that no one would forget, okay?
Mm.
Andrew had broken up with his beautiful girl in in school, and he tore up all the photos of her. But Charles had snuck them out of the trash, according to Texas Monthly. Quote, weeks later, Andrew got a new girlfriend and asked her for a photo. One night, while Andrew was staring at his new girlfriend's picture, he realized that something was wrong. He looked closer. It seemed that her eyeballs had been cut out and replaced with, good Lord, the eyeballs of his old girlfriend. In disbelief, Andrew looked up at the ceiling. There, staring down at him, was another pair of his old girlfriend's eyeballs. More eyeballs were above the urinal in the men's bathroom down the hall. No matter where Andrew turned, he was confronted by the sight of his old girlfriend's almond-shaped eyes.
I mean,
oh wow,
this is going to haunt me. Like, every time I see, like, eyes now for the rest of my life, I'm going to think about this.
And I like my eyes, and now I'm completely changing my tune on everything like that. Also,
I like your eyes too.
Thanks. Okay, Dad, we're going to have issues later. We'll talk about
it. He's good at just stopping the show in its tracks. I don't know if you've noticed that with his comments, Matt.
He is. I feel like two things with this. Yeah. One, I guess, like, I would know if someone replaced my girlfriend's eyes with an ex-girlfriend's eyes, although in a photograph, like, I don't know. That just seems like a very weird prank.
Like, well, yeah, exactly.
Like, would I care? I just think it's stupid. Number two, it seems like a super creepy prank.
Yeah.
Like, you fished out photographs, like, from the trash. Like, that's a red flag as a friend. That's a red flag for me.
I don't even know, like, how to explain what I'm feeling. You're just feeling things.
Take a drink, man. You're feeling things. After marrying his college sweetheart and becoming a well-loved teacher with forged transcripts, getting caught, getting his beautician's license, and getting hired at a salon as a stylist with zero experience, the Renaissance man began working on a commissioned painting of a friend's wife. He spent weeks on the 6-foot painting, but when his friend came by to check on his progress, there was white empty holes where the eyes belonged.
Oh my God, it's enough.
I know. It's like, we got it, dude. Yeah. You have a theme.
You like eyes, okay.
It would take Charles months before he finally finished them. Mm. In 2018, the Daily News reported that Charles Albright was 84 and confined to a psychiatric hospital, still insisting that he killed no one and never touched a human eyeball. He probably didn't touch the human eyeball, but he, like, worshipped that in the back corner.
Yeah.
Also, where the fuck are the eyeballs?
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's it. I was like, what's next here?
I don't know how to feel very conflicted about this show.
Well, now you know, if you've crossed your T's and dotted your I's, what that's all about from the beginning of the show.
And, like, am I happier that, I mean, like, I hope he killed them before taking out their eyes first.
It seems like that's what happened based on the,
like, I'm an organ donor on my license or whatever, and I want to, like, give everything to medical research that I possibly can, but I remember in elementary school or high school, I was talking to my brother's girlfriend, and she was like, you know, a woman of science, and she was like, yeah, I want to donate my entire body to science except my eyes. And I was like, what? You're dead already. Like, what do you care? She's like, I just can't get over, like,
someone having
my eyes. And yeah, I was like,
I get that.
I guess eyes, as Matt so lusciously said, are the windows to the soul. And if we take that fucking cockamamie bullshit to be true, it's kind of right.
So on
it's
her
the
lic-
thing you connect with.
So on her license, does it say yes, except the eyes?
See, I don't know. Like, I don't know delineate. If you could, like, I don't know if you could, like, click certain things. But she was like, I just don't want to give up my eyes. And I never thought it. I literally blacked out statement until right now. I thought about it. But, like, I don't know. Weird, I feel weird about it, too.
Well, guys, let's get to some listener shout outs. Darren, why don't you take this first one here?
Catherine on Facebook says, not to be dramatic or anything, but I would die for Maggie and Miles.
And she's, of course, talking about Miles and Maggie, the bartender from Milkshakes and Magic,
which is our, I would say, Emmy award winning show.
Yeah, I think we should get Oscars, everything, Grammys, whatever we can get.
I feel like the thing that that show revealed the most was that I actually have a heart and can deal with children.
Absolutely. I thought the same thing. By the way, I do want to mention on the air, you did such a great job with them last week.
Oh, thanks.
And I mean,
No one was expecting me to?
No, not necessarily. I knew that's what you were going to say. Yeah. But no, not necessarily that. But just, I will admit, you know, heading into that conversation with them, I had no idea what to expect. You know, we have guests in all the time, but they're adults who have a specific thing to talk about.
Yeah.
So this was such an open-ended thing. I found myself being a little, not nervous, but just
what
could happen on the show? And I thought you really guided the conversation well. And especially considering we only had one mic between you and I.
Yeah.
So good job, Taryn.
Well, they're hella adorable. And
yeah,
for me, the hardest part was not cursing. And then Matt in the meeting was like, you said damn. And I was like, I'm sorry.
You can work on that.
It's one thing for me to hate Matt, but you don't hate children. Children are off limits.
Oh, that is a good point.
And, you know, I'll shit on their father all I want.
Right.
But never them. They're perfect angels.
Yes. And thanks, Megan, for adding the little intro to the next full episode where they're like, I'm Miles and Maggie, and you're listening to Martine's
Swoon. Very good touch.
We should just add that to every episode, I think, moving forward. Yeah. Okay, Alexis on Facebook. Oh, she had a very heartwarming post.
Yeah, she did. Read it.
She says, quote, not looking for attention or anything, just wanted to share this. Recently, I've been going through a super tough breakup of a long relationship. We're still best friends, and he feels the same about me, but can't trust things will change. It's ripping me apart. I'm just barely getting through the days without crying right now and dropping weight like crazy. The only things helping me take the edge off right now are my cat, this podcast. Though now that I'm caught up, it's harder waiting for them, and the community that comes along with it. Darren Karp and John Thrasher, you guys are awesome, and everyone here is amazing. The memes are great, and everyone is so nice and supportive of each other. So thank you, everyone, for being exactly who you are.
Everyone except for me. I
was going to say, I think the main.
Yeah, because she's an actual fan.
That was my reaction, like, too. I was like, luckily she didn't mention Matt.
Like, this woman's going through a traumatic breakup, and he brings it back to himself.
Yeah, it's
and then he wonders
something.
Why we fucking hate him.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, back to
let's
Alexis.
Talk about Matt for 5 minutes. Alexis, like, thank you so much for sharing, and it's really, you know, brave of you to share. And just for me personally, like, I feel I'm one of those people, because I have no emotions, that, like, I'm like, how do I respond to this? And, you know, how do I make this person know that I got her without seeming, like, corny or cheesy? Because, you know, like,
right.
You know, it's like after something bad happens to you and someone's like, I'm sorry. And it's like, I don't really want to hear that you're sorry. Like, and you're not sorry. You're just saying it. And, like,
yeah.
I understand that you're not looking for us to cure everything. But just what you said, like, really helps us. And we're definitely listening to all of you guys out there. And we definitely read everything. Even if we're not responding, we're reading, we're looking, we're trying to like as many things as possible. And we definitely want this to be a positive community for everyone, because it certainly helps John and I. I know that. And every, like, tough day that you and I have had, I feel like this is really our rock and our stone. And we've laughed so many times on that Facebook group. And, you know, like, we just want to let you guys know that we're here for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote to her, I said, stay strong, Alexis, you'll get through it. And then I quoted Dumbledore and I said, happiness can be found even in the darkest of times if one only remembers to turn on the light. So that's advice for anyone out there
that really
is going through a hard time right now.
Yeah, I think that's a really good, I think it's a really good Dumbledore lesson. Yeah.
And now that you're single, Alexis, can you send me a picture of your eyes, please?
Oh, God.
Great. That we just lost a subscriber.
She unsubscribed.
He makes it about him.
Yeah, it always
makes
is.
It about him.
Well, we have announced shows. We have Austin coming up. We have a big announcement this week for New York City.
Follow us on social media.
Yeah. And we'll be back on Thursday with another shot.
Yes, we will.
Bye.
Bye.